Welcome to the Visibility Strategies for Women Entrepreneurs podcast, where we empower female business owners to step boldly into the spotlight and claim the recognition they deserve. I'm your host, Tori Barker. I'm passionate about helping women like you transform your visibility into tangible business success. Each week on this show, we'll dive deep into game-changing strategies, share inspiring success stories from women who've mastered their visibility, and offer practical, actionable advice you can implement immediately. Whether you're just starting your entrepreneurial journey, pivoting your business model, or ready to elevate your existing presence to new heights, you'll discover effective approaches to create exciting opportunities and expand your reach. So let's harness the power of strategic visibility and grow your business together. Welcome to the show. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us again. We are back on the podcast, and I am so excited to introduce my guest, Liz Weber. Liz, how are you?
I'm good, Tori. How are you today?
Doing awesome. I'm really excited to learn about who you are, what you do, and share that with our audience. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure. So basically what I do, Tori, is I'm a management consultant, and specifically what I do with my clients who are business owners, board directors, executives, is I help them typically in one of three ways. The first way quite often is with strategic planning. So I will guide their strategic planning initiatives, their retreats, their summits, to help them create a clear plan to guide where they need to take their organization or where they want to take their organization to maintain its viability, its relevance, its success, its profitability. Yeah. Invariably then, as part of those conversations, when we talk about where does your organization want to go, need to go, we fall into conversations about, well, who's going to do that work at that time and what skill sets are you going to need? Yeah. So we get into conversations about talent development and workforce development. So where might we need to restructure the organization? What positions might we need to restructure? What positions should you recruit for? What positions do you plan on developing from within? And then we really get into this conversation of, given the current employee population you have and the individuals you have, where is the gap in the skill sets that they're going to face given what's expected of them now and what's going to be expected of them a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now?
Yeah.
So we get into that talent development and succession planning conversation. And then the third thing that I do is really one-on-one or one in group consulting with some training in there on developing the skills needed to do those jobs and to lead the companies going forward. So those three main service lines are what I do, in addition to speaking at conferences or writing books or my blog.
Yeah. And you've had a pretty long and successful career. Have there been any pivotal moments in your career that's made the difference for you personally in that success and the visibility of you and your brand as you've grown?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I think, like with most people, there have been some definite transition phases. So I think the first thing that I'll share is when I grew up in Wisconsin, a small farming town in South Central Wisconsin, my dream for myself was to be an international commodities broker. And Tori, I have no idea where I got that idea. I didn't even really know what it was. It just sounded cool. So I got my degree in international business. But my capstone course in my undergrad degree was taught by this guy named Jim Farrell, and he was this thing called a consultant. And he would talk about his work with his clients that tied all the different things I was studying: marketing, operations, finance, accounting, you know, computer systems, everything. And he would tie it all together. And he would say, well, this is what the book says, but when I work with my clients, these are the real challenges that they're actually having. And here's in reality how you fix these things.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was the coolest job that anybody could possibly have, because you would learn about businesses, you could listen to their problems, you tell them how to fix it, and then you leave and you bill them, you know, and then they have to do the work, but you give them the advice. I just thought that sounded fantastic. So anyway, flash forward, growing up in a small farming town in Wisconsin, I couldn't get a job in international business because I had no international experience. So I took an internship with the State Department, the U.S. Department of State, which converted into a contract position. I was very fortunate. I worked there for 10 years. So that was my first pivot from where I thought I was going to be to what actually happened. The universe lined up in that the office that I worked for was basically the State Department version of the military commissary system. So I was not a policy and diplomacy person. I was helping get food and liquor to our embassies and consulates around the world. So I was basically dealing with commodity brokers, helping get food to our foreign service officers and their families around the world. And I realized, Tori, within the first 6 months, that if I had to do that as my career, I was going to commit suicide because it was horrible. It was just not going to be a fit for me. So the first pivot was, this is not what I want to do. And my strength in that position again started to shine in that I was responsible for organizing conferences around the world to teach our foreign service officers and their spouses and people who were staffing some of these commissaries how to do those jobs because they were business positions and these were not business-minded people. And my visibility, my profile, and my reputation within the company I was contracting through at the State Department rose dramatically, even as a 23, 24-year-old, because I was able and I guess naive enough to do things on a scale that I was woefully underqualified to do, but my boss would just say, "Hey, go do it. Go handle it. You know, we have a small staff, you have to handle it." So I was pushed in a position where I was briefing and debriefing ambassadors and deputy chiefs of missions and things like that, and inspectors general on a regular basis. So my visibility increased because I was put in positions where I had to do my job and I had to be confident. When I left that position and started my own company, I relied on my reputation that I had built to get my first clients and reached out to those clients in that network because of the visibility and the respect that I had gained through my work with the State Department. And then I'm very fortunate to say the last basic 30 years of my business has primarily been driven on referrals and the visibility of when people see me speak, and the way that I guess I can present myself, but also communicate messages that resonate with them on how to be stronger leaders. That has been a blessing for me in the many, many years I've been doing this. So if that answers, I'm hoping that answers your question that you're
Yeah,
going for.
absolutely. Yeah, and I imagine that, as a lot of people do, the experience that you have and the experiences that you've learned for your own career, your own visibility, ties into how you help your clients. And especially in the leadership roles that you're helping them with, and you know, their external and internal leadership has got to be definitely driven from a lot of, you know, your previous experience, your current experience, and the knowledge that you have.
Exactly. And you know, it's interesting. I just gave a presentation yesterday morning to a local SHRM chapter, and SHRM is Society of Human Resource Managers. I speak to a lot of HR professionals and a lot of SHRM organizations. And it was a great time for me, to your point, because the questions they ask, you know, when you do a Q&A, you never know what you're going to get. But because I've been around a while, you know, hence the gray hair, you know, I've experienced a lot. And the biggest thing that I always tell people that I love what I do because I get to work with some really smart people. And I've been very, very fortunate in I'm sitting in board meetings. I'm sitting in executive team meetings. I'm sitting in strategy meetings. My consulting and coaching clients very often call me and talk to me before they talk to their senior staff, before they go to their board, before they go to their spouse. And so they are teaching me every day. And I love that. I just absolutely love that.
What are some of the strategies that you help to implement when you're working with these companies for, you know, success, growth, and leadership planning? Are there like common strategies that you use or see or need to implement?
I'll answer it this way, and it ties into the presentation that I gave the group yesterday. The times we're in right now with my clients, I can only speak to my experience with them, but as a world at large, things are just in a kind of different place right now. But with my clients in particular, they are so frazzled because there is, economic concerns, there's policy change concerns, there's pricing concerns, there's, viability concerns. And in addition to that, a lot of my clients, their workforce and their leadership pool has shrunk because we had COVID, and a lot of leaders who had been there for a while left way sooner than expected because they're like, you know what, I'm close enough to retirement, I'm out of here now. With some of the challenges over the last 5 years, and the pace of change and the pace of productivity has just ramped up even further, more individuals have like, you know what, peace out. I'm close enough to retirement, I'm out of here. And what's happening now is with dramatic shifts in reduction in forces, in the trickle-down effect, I have a number of clients that are also either government or government contractors. They've been affected. And so they're shrinking their workforces and their management pools. All that being said, is employees who are still there are great individuals and smart, but haven't had the experience or the exposure, number one. And if they have, the amount of work that they're still expected to do has just quadrupled because there aren't as many people to do it now. So I give all that background to answer your question. What I continually focus my clients on, and this has been happening actually for the last 18 months in particular, is what do you fo need to focus on next? And it sounds really basic, but a mantra that I share with my clients, and I say what I help my clients do, is I help my clients focus on the right things at the right time to get the right impact. So yes, they might have a 3-year plan, but what are you going to do for this next quarter? What are the top three priorities you need your team to focus on for the next quarter? Because we can think and dream a year out, but because things are so rapidly changing, the most we can shoot for is quarter by quarter, and we're going to meet regularly, we're going to talk regularly, and we're going to adjust in real time. So it's identifying what's going to have the most impact and what's going to have the most leverage. And everything else that is nice to do, sorry, but it's got to go off to the side.
And it's like, it's almost, if you think about it, as stages of leadership. Like you've got, and everyone's at different stages in an organization. There's some people who, maybe at the initial stage where they're just starting out, and you're grooming them to that executive level leadership. And then there's some that have kind of been around a little bit longer, but they still need that confidence boost, experience, hands-on, all of those types of things. So as a leader in an organization like that, it's got to be challenging to find the right stages, strategy for each individual while keeping and maintaining the overarching goals.
Well, it's a really good question, Tori, because that exact issue is the primary issue that I have conversations around with every single one of my executive coaching clients. And I'm not being extremist when I say that. That is the issue. And I'll just use the words that I use, is I help my clients get really clear, what is your job? And what I mean by that, if you are the CEO, what are you supposed to be doing as a CEO? You're not supposed to be doing cost estimation anymore. Even though you did that 20 years ago and you still, that's not your job anymore. That's the cost estimator's job. If you're the deputy director of an agency, what is your job? And why are you doing this other job over here? And it sounds, again, really basic, but number one, what is your job? And then how do you fulfill that? What should be your presence in that role? And I share that because I think it's really important for any of your listeners, particularly those who are younger. When I first came out of college, 22, 23, 24, I remember when I, started attending some of my first management meetings. And I remember my college roommate and I got a call because she had also just gotten promoted and she had started attending some of her first meetings. And we were talking, we're like, I thought that the adults would have it all figured out, But I'm like in some of these management meetings, and some of the things I say are kind of dumb, you know? And she and I had naively thought when we become adults, the real managers, all of a sudden we're going to get smart and we're going to get confident and we're going to have all the answers. And no, that's not what happens.
Have it all
And I've
figured out.
shared, and yeah, no, it doesn't happen. I mean, we still don't have it all figured out.
Right.
But naively going into the workforce, I thought that somehow I was going to ultimately get this epiphany and be one of the smart people. But I share that because even at an executive level, there are individuals that deal with self-confidence issues that don't understand how do I need to present myself? How do I need to make myself visible so I can be respected? And
Yeah.
I'll just share with your audience that this is something that I often do when I'm giving a presentation. I'll just jump into impromptu coaching mode. So I did this yesterday morning. One of the most basic things that I recommend to my clients, stereotypically to women, stereotypically to some functions within an organization, quite often HR, if you want to increase your profile, your visibility, how people view you, simply by how you speak up in meetings matters. And what I mean by that is don't just talk, but when you talk, you need to speak loud enough so the people furthest away from you in the room can hear you without going, "What did she say? What did she say?" Because if you give any cause for someone to go, "What did she say?" people are petty. And if I can't hear you, Tori, because you're always talking so softly, in my petty mind, I'm going to go, she must not be that great.
Or she doesn't know what she's talking
Or
about.
she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
But if you say, "Hey, Liz, I don't agree, but let me explain why," I'm going to go, there's something behind her.
Yeah.
And it's a subtle thing, but it carries a lot of hidden weight.
Makes a big difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on that subject of women in the leadership space, do you think that there are common fears or challenges that these women leaders face? I mean, that's one thing, like coming to this executive meeting for the first time, speaking up. I mean, that's one thing, but is there a common fear or challenge that you see?
I think women tend to doubt themselves more than men do, and many of us have heard that before. I see it more. Women, and I've even caught myself to a degree doing it, but women will tend to doubt themselves more and not say anything unless they think it's exactly correct. Whereas men are much more comfortable going, "Well, here's an idea," and they haven't thought it through. And as they're speaking, they're saying it. And it's really interesting because I, for many, many years, you know, it had to be perfect before I would submit something, or it had to be perfect before I would send it over just so a client could, you know, give me feedback on something. And thank God, one day I didn't have time to get this presentation ready for a client, and I wasn't going to hit his deadline. And for whatever reason, I just thought, what would a guy do? What would a guy do? And what a guy would do, instead of completing the 36 slides, a guy would get the first three or four done and go, "Hey, this is the direction I'm heading. What do you think?" And I sent it over, and the client goes, "Hey, I love it. Go ahead and finish it up." And I went, "You gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me." And when I thought about it, I thought, but wait a minute, Liz. The client never said, "I need all 36 slides perfect." The client just said, "Hey, give me a deck that we can start brainstorming on." I was the one that put the pressure on myself. So it's a matter of I think women, my advice is let's be clear, number one, on what our role is and what is the employer or what is the client really expecting of us? What do they really need from us? And how much are we ourselves overblowing that and putting more stress on ourselves than what they're even contemplating?
It's almost that phrase, like, done is better than perfect.
Exactly.
Just like it almost like the messy, like, just put yourself out there, even though you're fearful of being visible or afraid of putting yourself out there. Sometimes you just gotta take that leap and do it messy first, right? Like when you podcast, like your first podcast is probably not going to be great, right? But you got to do the first one to get to the 100th one or whatever it might be. And that's, I think, the advice that women specifically need to hear, because it's sometimes it holds us back, and it holds us back from greatness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, do you think that they're in the next few years coming, do you think there are big opportunities for women to expand as entrepreneurs, like with knowledge, education, exposure? Do you think that there's kind of this wave of, female entrepreneurs that are going to be rising up in the next few years?
Oh, I think more than ever. Absolutely, yeah, more than ever. Because, the COVID really gave everybody a taste of the freedom of not being locked into, a traditional 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever your work schedule was. And that really whet the appetite for a lot of people of that flexibility, which is part of being, your own boss. On the other hand, what it didn't do is prepare people for the amount of work it takes to actually be a successful entrepreneur, but that's a different story. But I think the opportunities for individuals and women in particular to be their own entrepreneur, to provide a service, provide products, whatever they want to do, is greater more than ever because I think there's a stronger need. The need for additional revenue streams besides a salary. I think there's a need for that personal fulfillment and challenge that they may not be getting someplace else. And I just think there is a stronger desire by the marketplace at large to support an individual who is freelancing. I think it's just going to become more and more acceptable that you might have a full-time job, but also have a viable part-time business. I think it's going to be a prime opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's so much buzz around women empowerment and successful female entrepreneurs that I hear about, probably because I'm in that space, but I think that it's common for people who aren't in this space as well, still feeling that buzz or momentum, if you will, of female entrepreneurs, stay-at-home moms starting side hustles and like making a big difference in that shift for growth for women to really make a big impact worldwide. It's going to be amazing. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk. I have two more points I want to talk about before we wrap up. So talk a little bit about how you got into publishing books, because I know you have several books that you've authored, and the speaking part of your career and teaching, and how that has really helped you build your thought leadership and your authority and visibility, and kind of what propelled you down those paths.
I'll try to keep it brief. So, flashback to when I was with the State Department, and I had a fantastic job, and I was actually organizing and speaking conferences. So, that was just part of what I was doing. While I was working with them, I also was teaching as an adjunct at a couple colleges. I would teach business communications or business writing, things like that. And so, I knew I could teach, I knew I could present at conferences. There was a point in time where I knew I had always wanted to have my own company, but I didn't know what. I didn't want a retail store. I didn't know what it was until one day at work, I attended one of those national seminars, Fred Pryor seminar type things. And I remember sitting in the room and I don't remember what my company had paid for. It was like $249 or something like that for me to attend. But Tori, I remember sitting in the room and I remember going, $249, $249, 200. And I was going, I could do this. I could do this as a business. And I left and I started my own company as a training company. So I was training basically supervisory skills on, everything from stress and time management to project management and re-engineering to for military bases that were former, connections of mine, and started going from there. So I started my company as a training company in the management topic area. My clients were the ones that started pulling me up into consulting work and things like that. And it wasn't until 2001, I was in Colorado and business was not great. And I saw in the Denver Post this thing, an advertisement for the National Speakers Association, which is an association of professional speakers. Their Colorado chapter meeting was coming up, and it was that Saturday. And I had never heard of this thing of being a speaker. And I went to this meeting, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you can get paid for talking. I mean, I do that all the time. I did that all the time with the State Department, and I was already training. I had a training company. And through that association, I learned about writing books. And they said, you know, if you're going to speak on a stage, you got to have a book because then you can get some authority there. So it all kind of came together in that idea of, and to your comment earlier, I mean, my first book, I mean, it's fine, it's good. It wasn't horrible, but it's not like some of the other ones I wrote. But it was a start, and it was, you know, a couple of those moments were serendipitous moments. But it was also finding a community in that association, which I'm still very much attached to and have had many leadership roles in that association. But it's the relationships that came out of that and the network that I've been able to build because of that.
I love that story because what I want people to hear is, you know, when someone looks you up right now, they're going to see this successful, you know, female entrepreneur, many books, speaking on stages, teaching business for 30 years, right? Like all of these things. But what I want people to hear is that you don't have to compare yourself to you now, right? Because it took you these years in the evolution of your business to grow. So it's like almost like have patience and know that your journey is your journey and you will grow as you're meant to grow. Know what your end goal is, right? Like I want to be at this point. Those are amazing goals to have, but know that you don't have to go from step one to step 10 in 1 year of entrepreneurship. I think that's really important for people to hear.
That is a huge point, Tori, and I will echo that forever because the first conference that I went to for the National Speakers Association, I'd already been in business like, I don't know, 10 years or so. But that first conference, I still remember flying home from Denver, or back to Denver, and I had 5 pages single-spaced of handwritten notes that I wrote on the airplane because I was so far behind of what I thought everybody else. Because I had no books, I had at that time no cassette tapes, I had nothing in this for the speaking arena. And I felt like I was such a loser, but I had a good training business with a good client base where a lot of them didn't have that. So to your point is, you know, that the biggest thing we can do to ourselves is compare ourselves to where somebody else is and not remember why our clients like us in the first place, and then how to leverage that and build from that.
Well, Liz, it has been amazing talking to you, and I feel like we could just go on and on on different topics. We can have a whole podcast on one topic and a whole podcast on the other. But I just wanted to say thank you for sharing this knowledge and experience, and educating us on, you know, your success and how you've gotten there and the visibility journey that you've been through. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to be here today. And I'd love to have you tell us how people can learn more about you, find you online, connect with you on social. Where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Well, thank you, Tori. That's very nice. I'm glad we could talk as well. I would suggest your listeners connect with me one of two ways primarily. On social, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on X, but honestly, I'm the most active on LinkedIn, and my call sign there is Liz Weber CMC. And Weber has one B. The other place they can connect with me is through my website, which is the easiest way is liz-weber.com. You can just go there and find me there.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for being a guest. I appreciate having you on today.
Thank you so much, Tori. It's been nice.